Welcome to OC Housing Connection Program, Orange County's number one trusted resource for all your real estate and home mortgage news. Here are your hosts, Hamid and Faye Hamadachi.
Hello, everyone. We hope you had a fun and relaxing weekend. Let's get started today by talking about the state of real estate. I'm here with my co-host, Faye.
Hello.
And Paul, our sound engineers.
I can't wait to hear what you're going to talk about this week.
Well, I want to start by talking about Trump, actually.
That's what I knew.
You asked me a few weeks ago, I think, if it matters who gets elected, whether
yes.
it's Trump or Hillary.
Right.
And, you know, I said, I don't think so, because the state of the economy is the way it's working. It's like, you know, working fine. There's no problem. I don't think they would change anything. However, last week, Trump made a comment which was very interesting. He mentioned something about, you know, he wants real estate to be down and keep the rates low. And he's got some good reasoning. He says, you know, if you make the rates go up, number one, the dollar will go up, which would cause our exports to go down. And
right.
That's not good for the economy, and I agree with him. He also mentioned that if the rates go up, we would be actually paying more for the money that we have borrowed.
Right.
Which still makes sense, and I agree with both of his comments. Now, he did mention that if he goes into the office, he's going to get rid of Ms. Janet Yellen.
So we know she's not going to vote for him.
That's one vote he's not going to get.
She's
a Democrat anyway. And he can't really get rid of her until her term finishes in 2018.
Right.
And then he can, you know,
appoint
somebody
else.
Exactly. And if the Congress agrees with that appointment, that person would be elected or selected. Now, normally speaking, most presidents haven't actually selected the head of the Fed based on the party. I mean, Clinton elected Greenspan. He was a Republican. And Obama elected
Bernanke,
yeah. And he was also a Republican. But Yellen is a Democrat. I think that's just it's not really
I thought that the president can't really control the interest rate. I thought the interest rate is controlled by the market.
Yeah, that's what you guys told me about the
Fed.
That's
true. But he was saying that he would like to see the interest rates low. And I think he's got a good point, actually.
But
because if we keep it low, our dollar won't go up, which is important for making sure our exports are cheaper.
But I think the mere fact of a Trump in office would rattle the market so badly that it would actually go higher.
I'm not sure about that. I don't think the fact that he gets elected would really cause any problem for the market. If anything, it would actually improve it, because he's more of a businessman, more for the market, and wants the economy get going, which should be good for the economy.
But he hates the Wall Street people, doesn't he?
He pretends he does, yeah.
Well, he pretends he hates everybody.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure who he likes.
This morning, I saw a CNN report that said how his tax plan would increase tax breaks for the rich, and not 2 days ago, I saw him on some interview with Jake Tapper, I think at CNN, saying, well, of course, rich people will pay more, like me, under my administration. I think the rich should pay more. And then he comes out with a plan where the rich pay less. I don't understand this guy.
Well, he's still not sure where he is. He's still trying to get his points across the Republican Party, because remember, the party is not very happy with him right now. I haven't seen any of the elders of the party coming out and supporting him. I mean, with the exception of what's her name? The previous vice for Poland.
Palin. Sarah Palin.
She's the only one who supported him.
Well, that tells you a lot.
Yeah, right.
McCain doesn't like
him. We're showing our bias here, right?
McCain doesn't like him.
All three Bushes, the last two presidents.
All three Bushes don't like him. Paul Ryan doesn't like him.
The National Review has written, blasted him, and said they're not going to support him. They're advising people vote
now,
libertarian.
I think there's something
Bill
else.
Bill Kristol, the Weekly Standard, he says no way. Yeah,
there's something we got to keep in mind when the politicians say they're not going to support him. A lot of them actually want to talk to him and see what they can get in return if they support him.
Mm-hmm.
So they do say that now, but once they get together with him and, you know, hash it out, I'm sure they come out and say, yes, we're going to support him.
David Brooks, the conservative columnist for the New York Times, I know people groan when they hear that, but he is a very conservative, well-thought-of columnist, and he wrote, I quoted it this week, he said this may be a Joe McCarthy moment. Remember Joe McCarthy in the 50s, the communist witch hunt trials that went on and implicated everybody till it finally was exposed to be a farce?
Mm-hmm.
Joe McCarthy, so, you know, people were so afraid of him that nobody would take him on until he finally started attacking the army and everything else, and they finally said, enough of this nonsense. Anyway, the point he's making is this is a Joe McCarthy moment, perhaps, where people will judge you 5 years from now, 4 years from now, the next election cycle, where were you on the Trump issue? Did you go along with him? Did you participate in this, or did you stand up to him? And that may be what Ryan's thinking.
That could be true. Now, we've got to wait for him to get elected first. I mean, this is all speculation we'll be talking about right now. Because I'm not sure. The way we look, the way it's looked at, I don't think he's going to get elected right now. In fact, they talked to the G20 countries, and every country wanted Hillary to be elected as a president, except Russia. They like Trump for reason.
Even though he says he's going to go be tough with them. Well, the only reason I posed that question is because historically, the market would jump if a Republican was elected, and the market would dip initially if a Democrat was elected.
Yes.
And I don't think in this cycle or in the last couple cycles that holds necessarily true.
That's very true. That's very true. Now, getting back to real estate, interest rates. I don't think they're going to move the interest rates. It looks like from the last meeting, I think it was 2 weeks ago on Wednesday, they are going to keep it where it is. They're still not sure about the state of the economy. So they will keep it the same probably till June. That's when they're going to look at it again now.
Seems like they had a little backlash when they did slightly raise it this year.
Exactly. And my guesses are it's probably going to stay the same till maybe September. We've got to see what happens in September. Many things are happening right now. Europe, China, our own economy. And depending on how it turns out, they may look at raising it then. But between now and September, I think it's going to stay the same.
Well, I read on Wall Street, I guess the Greek, some of their debts is coming due also.
I know they're going to do this
mid-July, and, you know,
they're starting to negotiate again.
Negotiate the same thing
they did, what, a couple of years ago?
With England right now putting the euro, like they have it on.
They have it on referendum to get
referendum.
Out of it.
The Brexit, the British exit, perhaps, from the European Union. The Brexit is the
My personal feeling is I don't think it's going to happen. I know.
It's pretty close right now.
I know that, but it would really be devastating for the British economy. Paul, it's not that easy to separate yourself, your economy, from Europe. You know, I mean, they were thinking about Greece, for example, and that's a much smaller economy, and it's not such a productive economy when you compare it to the British economy. So it's not that easy, and most businesses, including banks, are against that. Now, I honestly don't see that much benefit for getting out of Europe.
But I think it's, again, an emotional response. We are tired of bailing out all these poor European countries like Portugal, like Italy, perhaps, like Greece. And why don't we just let them sink? They will go off on their own way here. Yeah.
True. But then when
we have no common interest in supporting these. The Germans do. The Germans have steadfast and said, yes, we will impose austerity in these countries, but we will stand up and help them pay down their debts here, because together we rise to united we succeed, divided we fail, here they seem to think.
Very true, but you know, the way they're right now, the economy is intertwined, it would be difficult to separate it. And remember, Britain is a small island right next to Europe.
But it's a mighty island.
Yeah, it's a very big
The economy, I don't think the economy is that mighty when you compare it to the German economy or the whole European economy. I know it's a very strong economy and it's a big piece of that economy, but it's not that comparable to the
Think they do need euro as much as they don't want to need it. They do need
And if I'm not mistaken, you guys spent a lot of time in England. You went to school there a little bit years ago.
So
What do you think? Do you still have friends back there? Do you still
many friends. Love it.
But, I mean, what's the anecdotal evidence you collect from friends and family back in the United Kingdom, Great Britain, and England? Are they for staying with Europe, or are they for going their own way?
I think
like Trump and Clinton.
Like Trump and Clinton can go either way in the same family, yeah.
I'm not quite sure how it would affect the individual person once they get out. Yes, there would be some effects long term, but let's say they get out this July. It's not really going to affect you that much. It would cost you more probably to import from Europe because they're going to add,
tariffs,
etc. It would be more difficult to import from Europe. I know, for example, in terms of people moving across back and forth, that would cause a big problem. Right now, any European can just move to England and start working, or vice versa.
Right.
That's going to cause
a problem.
Suddenly
you need passports and all sorts of other things.
Passports, work permits, etc. So those are, and something that's interesting is the newer European countries that have joined the euro are providers of very cheap labor. When I lived in England, we never had cheap labor. You had to use the British people, and you paid them the minimum wage or whatever was the market rate.
For example, there's also lots of Polish workers in both Ireland and in England.
Exactly. But this time, I think it was 2 years ago when I was there, I saw a lot of people from the newly added European countries, and they're doing cheap labor. They're washing cars, washing windows at a very reasonable rate, basically because they want to work, whereas that wasn't there before. And this actually helps the economy.
Expanded the labor pool, gave
exactly.
you more options, right?
You have unskilled labor that's willing to work for much cheaper, and that's...
Well, you said on a long show a long time ago, that's partly why the Germans keep accepting refugees from the Middle East, because they have almost a zero or a negative birth rate here, and
yes.
they need more laborers.
Right.
I mean, that's a problem that Japan is part of the problem why Japan can't get out of its deflation, because the population is getting old, and there is, when you get older, you just don't buy a lot of things,
Right. Nor do you have the interest.
You don't have the desire, nor, nor the need.
Faye, tell us about the state of the economy and the interest rates in America. What do you think?
What happened, we had the job report on Friday.
Mm-hmm. A little disappointing, wasn't it?
It was very disappointing. It's actually the, most economists really... They agree on one thing, is maybe we're just going to have one rate hike. I personally don't see that because I think we're still kind of struggling, and we are closer to a recession, I think.
Now, keep something in mind. The job report was lower mainly because of higher productivity. That's very important.
I didn't hear that part of it. Okay.
I understand... I guess the worst part of it, the economy was declining in retail jobs, and we were hoping there's going to be a lot more job there.
Right.
Yeah.
Because people just aren't kicking that retail spending in like they keep assuming we will.
Not only that, though, Paul, the way economy works has changed a lot. Look at Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
They're a retailer.
Yeah.
There are many companies like Amazon. Even
without retail employees, without shops, and although they opened their first
recently, there's even the grocery stores, which do the same thing.
Yeah.
A couple of outfits, they have apps, and you just go on there and order what you want, and they buy it for you from any store.
Or they have
you want.
Scanner aisles, where like Home Depot does and others, where there are no cashiers. And
so some of these jobs have gone away mainly because of technology.
Well, there's like a couple of things that's on the calendar for this week. One being the retail sales. It's coming out on Friday. We also have University of Michigan.
Do you know what they're expecting or what's the expectation of those?
0.08% is the forecast for the retail sales. Yeah. Retail sales has fallen, or it's been flat each month for this year. But the University of Michigan sentiment is coming. They're both coming out.
That's a consumer sentiment, right?
Consumer sentiment, yeah.
And what do they expect that? Do you think?
I don't know what their expectation is on that.
I don't think they know. I don't think anybody knows.
They usually come out with a number.
Yeah. We seem to be living in uncertain times here. And that's what amazes me. That's why I posed the question that we started with here. In such uncertainty, markets usually fall. People don't invest. They don't buy. They don't do lots of things if they're uncertain. And yet, the economy seems to slowly keep chugging along since the Great Recession throughout Obama's term. I know it's not on fire. I know people are disappointed. But,
there was a lot of money pumped into it.
Yes.
They printed money.
A couple trillion dollars.
Yeah, and this money is still in the economy.
Yeah.
It's almost like...
And somebody said something I thought was interesting, too. They said, you know, whether or not you're for or against Obama, the argument is that the economy's been very sluggish since he's been in office, and it has been. But it hasn't been negative.
Yes,
but you've got to
really
look at what did he enter.
Like, exactly.
I mean,
right.
we were falling apart. You know?
And that was the point they made. They said, go back and look at history. What happened after the Great Depression? It took a decade or more for us to recover. And the only way we really recovered was World War II. We had full employment because we had to fight a war. So everybody was suddenly employed. You take that away, it would have taken even more than a decade to come out of that. And this event that we went through at the beginning of his term, the Great Recession, was almost as great.
Actually, it was greater than the Depression. It's just that the way it was handled that came out so good.
So why are we so shocked that 8 years later, we're still sluggishly working our way out of this mess here? It took historically, it took that long or more to get out of its predecessor, the Great Depression.
Depression, exactly.
Depression.
So
I think we went through it. We're still like trying to get out of it. I don't think we ever got out of it. I think a lot of people think we actually recovered and we're going back. I don't think we ever recovered.
But so far we've had continual growth for I don't know how many a long, long period of time here under the Obama administration. Very sluggish growth, very anemic growth, but it hasn't been negative growth. We have not yet slid back, and that's been the such perpetual fear is that, like you said, we're one step away from going back into a recession, from going backwards here.
We're right on the edge, you know. Now, there's also a small business sentiment that's coming out on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
The small business sentiment hit a two-year low last month in March.
Wow, okay.
So that's supposed to, a National Federation of Independent Businesses, they survey they're forecasting it to be about 93%. We also have the PPI number coming out on Friday.
Well, what is the PPI, Faye?
The Producer Price Index.
I see, okay.
And so that's going to be an important number for us because, you know, anytime there's fear of inflation, rates move up.
So what would it take? The name of the show is OC Housing Connection. We're trying to relate these mega trends into local impact here. If the economy goes back into recession, even if there is a stock market bubble that bursts, as many fear, even if the rates go up, is that really going to dramatically affect Orange County?
Yes and no. Let's talk about what we have right now.
Right.
And then we can see where we're going if things happen.
All right.
Right now, the real estate market is very hot.
Yes.
Inventory is very low. Number of days a home stays on the market is about 29 days, which is very good. The inventory level is about 3.6 months, which is very low. Generally, we like to see that about 6 months. That's an equilibrium. So the market locally, I think, is still going to keep going and keep growing because the demand is still there. The rates are very good for buying.
Mm-hmm.
And people
and the demand. There's still a demand.
Exactly. And unfortunately, we just don't have enough homes. You know, not many people are listing their homes, or maybe they're not interested in listing it. And the prices keep going up. You know, it's
I mean, the price of the rent is skyrocketing too.
Yes,
I mean,
look how many apartments are being thrown up all over the place because of that.
Yeah.
So there's a lag behind. Once those apartments actually come in the market, we may actually see more reasonable rental prices. But for the time being, it is very hot.
So that would suggest that even if the economy cools off a bit, slips backwards, whoever gets in office, all these factors that we're afraid of and that typically affect housing. Housing is usually very sensitive to these kinds of changes. Here in Orange County, because of our unique situation, high demand, low inventory, can't build anymore, job growth, people want to live here, all that stuff seems to be keep pushing this market higher.
Paul, job growth, you mentioned, is very important.
Mm-hmm.
California economy is a very strong economy. We are basically high-tech, and in the South, we are service industry.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants to come and visit California. Everybody wants to go and see Disneyland or want to see the movie studios, etc. With the dollar being where it is, it's very, you know, good for the people to come and visit these places.
Mm-hmm.
So my guesses are even if our economy takes a dive, we won't be hit as hard as other parts of
that's
the country.
That's what I'm getting at. That
in
seems
County.
To be, yeah.
Well, I was looking at a study that was done by Furman Center study, and they basically looked at the rentals, and they didn't just look at the poorest area. They look at the poorest, which basically people that earn less than $41,950 a year, and
right.
they looked at people that make between $41,950 to $67,000, and mm-hmm. then people that make over $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually found out that between 2000 and 2014, the poorest area, the rent increased by 7.6%, whereas the middle, 21%, and the higher up, 18%.
Wow.
So this study was actually...
this is for nationwide?
Nationwide. Yeah. And they were basically saying there is more burden on the middle-class family because a lot of times, people in the poor area, they move out, whereas people in the middle class, they can't really move
exactly.
out.
Exactly.
They're attached to
so
a job, they're attached
yeah.
to a community,
so that's
family,
really
yeah.
The segment of population that's hurting the most with the rent.
And that's what we've seen throughout the political cycle. The middle class is the one it's the angriest. The middle class is the one that's voting for Trump. The middle class is the one that's particularly the blue-collar end of the middle class is the one that's feeling left behind and hasn't recovered, and the Rust Belt states and all that stuff. That seems to be the sore spot in our whole economy, the shrinking middle class.
And unfortunately, in Orange County, they're being hit the hardest. You
yeah,
know? Home prices going up and rental going up. It is getting tougher to find housing in Orange County.
Well, then we just all got to get richer here.
the people who own property, yes, they are. The people who live here already have jobs. Yes, I agree. But, you know, to keep it going, we need to have an ongoing expanding economy.
We had one other artificial thing that I don't get reported enough on. You've talked about it in this show. We've talked about it in some other shows here. The influx of foreign money, particularly Chinese money, into Orange County. Developments have literally been built for Chinese buyers mm-hmm. that were snapped up in cash. You've talked about,
of course,
if I've got two offers and one's an all-cash buyer, and another wants to, you know, get a loan, I'm going to take the all-cash offer. And that seems to, and they're willing to pay the high price, whatever, just
right.
to buy something here. Has that cooled off? Or you seem to
somewhat
suggest,
yeah. in Irvine, some agents were reporting this, that has cooled off. Mm-hmm. But I think overall it hasn't really. The way the state of the economy is in China, there's still a lot of people who are willing to move out and want to move out. Now, some are moving to Canada. I know in Vancouver, the home prices are going through the roof because of the Chinese.
Which leads to Faye's point here. She was talking before the show here. Yeah.
Do you know 600 billion of capital left the country in China? Now, this is
600 billion.
You know how much I love economists.
Yeah.
Right? Well, there was an article in Economist, and I'm a believer of economists.
You are. You're like
I am a believer. So if they write it, it's going
it's
to happen.
Fact.
And they were saying it's not a question of when, but.
It's not a question of if. Let's get it back.
But it's not a question of if, but when real trouble will hit China. And it's talking about the debts. China has increased their debt to GDP ratio from 150% in 2008 to nearly 260%.
Wow.
Now, China is one of the world's biggest economies,
the
right
second
after
second largest.
Second
yeah.
largest. Its stock market crashed last year. Its stock market is worth $6 trillion. Its bond market is worth $7.5 trillion. And we saw what happened last year when the stock market was going down.
Right.
So
the assumption is that if there is a triggering event for a worldwide recession or a U.S. recession, one of it could be the European Union's falling apart in Greece and all that. We've talked about that last year. The other is commonly thought to be China. Failure in China will ripple through the whole world. Now, so my point is, even if that happens, wouldn't that just increase the flux of money out of China into Orange County?
It already has. I mean, you can see that people are still coming over with a whole bunch of money.
I
give you an example.
I
had a property in Palmdale. It was fully rented. It was 40 units. We sold it. Chinese buyer bought it. Last I checked with the manager that we left over there, they only had 4 units rented.
Mm.
And I talked to the agent who was the selling agent. I said, what's going on? And he said, he's basically interested in bringing the money over.
He doesn't care what happens to it.
Exactly. And I can see his point of view. You know, it's a lot better to have, say, $1 million, $2 million in a safe place.
Right.
Just parked versus your money being in China and you're not sure. Because I know the government has been getting tougher and tougher on these rich people in China, and they've been taxing them more, getting more money from them and so on.
Right. So we're kind of their safety deposit box. They're putting money aside over here.
And that's why they're buying these homes, too. They just buy the homes. Right. Some of them don't even rent it.
So again, in our if our thesis for this first half hour holds true, that even though the economy is shaky, even though we have all these things that could slip us backwards, it's been anemic for the last 8 years, we always on the edge. Here in Orange County, if it dips, I don't think we're going to have the same dip.
I agree with you. Now, one other thing we got to keep in mind, America is a safe country. Everybody, whether you're European or Chinese, they want to bring their money here. They want to turn it into dollars because it is a safer economy.
Although, go back to Trump, where we started here, he shocked everybody the other day. He said, maybe we won't pay our debts. You know, it's the typical negotiating tactic. Maybe I won't pay these debts. Maybe we'll just buy them up or renegotiate. Hell, maybe we just won't pay them here. And everybody went shocked. Oh, my God, that's why you're the safest investment in the world. Because
exactly.
If everything else collapsed, the U.S. is still going to pay.
Right.
That's what we hope.
Plus, let's say you have $1 million. Where would you feel safer to put that money? I would put it in America. It's safer.
Not in China?
Or, you know, the banks. The safest banks.
Can I give you one? We'll end this section with one little other crazy thing. I read a report. I was going to bring it out to you guys here. Investing in Iran. As our relationships thaw out again here, Iran has been like Cuba. Cuba and Iran are the same thing. They've been held in taken off the list for so long, and they have so many needs and so many opportunities to invest. Are you going to see a flux of U.S. money go in to invest in either of those places?
No. In fact, I've seen Europeans, Indians, Chinese, and Eastern, countries. East Asia going there, but America is not there yet. In fact, specifically, there is an order that says the banks cannot work with Iran. Iran cannot use U.S. dollar to do trades.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And that is actually, it's a handicap for the American companies. And I'm thinking of Boeing, for example.
Yeah.
They would love to, if they wanted to sell something like 113 airplanes to Iran. They can't right now. It's still on the drawing board. So for political reasons, America is being held back, or it's not joining that.
And you think of all the brand names that would love to be there. It's my understanding that things like Coca-Cola and stuff are not in Iran. They have rip-off versions of them over there that people have opened up. But Coca-Cola would love to come over and open that market, or whoever.
I mean,
Ford Motors.
McDonald's.
Apple.
Chevy.
Apple.
Last week there was a report that Chevy, through its South Korean subsidiary, is going to start exporting cars to Iran. But then it came out and said the U.S. government has told them, no, you can't do that.
And so none of this, even with the Iran agreement to release funds and to try and slowly thaw these relationships out, the economic opportunities are still impediments there.
They're still not in good terms with America. Europeans have jumped at the opportunity. As soon as the agreement was announced, we had foreign ministers of all European countries, even the presidents, going in Iran and talking and vice versa. But no, we haven't seen anything from the U.S. actually.
We did a show on our strategic investment show, and very unusual for them, they talked to somebody who specializes in Myanmar, or the former country of Burma. And here's another isolated country that's been kept off the national landscape forever. And suddenly it's thawing out. Suddenly they've let the opposition leader, Aung San, or whatever her name is, Aung San, claim her role as president of the country. She'd won numerous times but was never allowed to serve. And the whole point is, it's thawing out. There's opportunities there. And Americans don't seem to be rushing to move into these new markets as the Europeans and others do. It's kind of the same thing Cuba and in Iran and maybe some North Korea.
Politics is actually, I think, the main reason. Look at Cuba. What did we achieve by not going there for, 60 years or something?
Nothing.
Nothing.
That was pretty much the argument of the Obama administration. It didn't work. What did we do? We didn't stop communism, and we didn't accomplish any change in the country because we had no leverage and no influence whatsoever.
In fact, this morning I heard the news that Chanel is one of the first designers which is going to Cuba, and they're going to build a very nice outfit in Cuba. So Once we get the politics out of these systems, I think the economies would be able to work with another.
Yeah.
The only area of Iran, actually, that has attracted Americans is traveling. There are many travel agencies which have these trips to Iran, and most of them are fully booked, actually. Which shows a lot of Americans are interested in going and visiting Iran.
You guys went to Iran recently.
We just came back very recently, 2 months ago.
We had a very nice trip. Probably the nicest trip.
And Faye said she finally... You said something I never pushed you on. You said, I finally made peace with Iran, or something like that. I don't know what that means, but you finally saw it in a different light.
Well, I think when you get older, you look at everything differently. Yeah. It's probably one...
It's a very nice country. It's very affordable. I mean, especially for Americans. I give you an example. We went between Tehran and Isfahan, which is a four-hour drive, we rented a private car for $70.
For the whole day.
For the whole day. For Americans, it's a very affordable country. It's very nice. They're extremely nice to Americans. They have tons of historical places that you would love to see. Stuff that goes back 2,000 years ago.
And we did a show with a guy, I think his name was Al Mojarian. He does intellectual property. And one of his things, because his father was an intellectual property attorney in Iran, and he inherited this business after his father died. So even though he's an American attorney here and works with, I don't know, restaurant chains and other things here, he has this other office that he just kept open in Iran. And he always said that the rule of law is very strong in Iran, and that there's a lot of internet intellectual property, unlike China or whatnot, where they're always ripping off intellectual property and stuff. It's not the case. It's just because the countries have been at odds, none of these brands are there or represented.
That's very true.
Okay. All right. Well, let's take a quick break, come back, and we'll talk about the next thing here. What's the second half?
Well, I'm going to talk about when is the best time to sell your home.
Okay.
And Faye's going to talk about a few points about mortgage.
I'm ready to sell mine right now and move to Iran.
Iran doesn't have copyrights law.
Oh, don't they? Okay, right.
It's very interesting. We were in Iran, a few years ago with Faye, and we asked a friend, where should we have lunch? And he told us, so-and-so restaurant on the corner. So we thought, oh, it's easy, right on the corner. We went to the corner. There were four restaurants with the same name on the same, on each side of this corner, right, and the intersection.
Well, and that's, oddly enough, intellectual property attorney said one of the things that brands do pay his firm and others to keep copyrights held, trademark, in the hope that they'll come back and claim them. So I think Coca-Cola does have a trademark for their name, and they're always trying to close out all these other brands that pop up that are sort of sound like Coke or Coke with two K's
Coke
or something.
Had a thing before.
Exactly. Right.
I think actually Coke or Pepsi was the first soft drink.
And we had Canada Dry, too.
Canada Dry in Iran. Okay.
That was when I was a kid.
All right. Well, we'll come back and bring this back to Orange County right after this.
What it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest, hire.
When it comes to pioneers in their respective industries, we all know the Apples, Starbucks, and Trader Joe's of the world. In the realm of recruiting, Decision Toolbox is the industry's best-kept secret. With 90% of their business from referrals and repeat customers, for over 20 years, Decision Toolbox's U.S.-based team of recruiters, sourcers, professional writers, quality personnel, and tech support has perfected a Six Sigma approach to talent management. No matter the size of the project, Decision Toolbox delivers incredible results. A cost per hire less than half of what contingency firms charge. With the winning candidate presented in an average of 14 days. All with a 12-month candidate warranty. With results like that, Decision Toolbox won't be a secret for long. Visit us at www.dtoolbox.com for more information.
All right. I'm always fascinated by the foreign policy discussions here. I know it doesn't really pertain directly to what we're talking about, but it is all interconnected.
Well, we talk about real estate. When is the best time to talk about real estate? I mean, when is the best time to sell your home if you're in real estate? So Zillow did a nice study. Hmm. They came up with some data. They took data from 2007 through 2015. When is the best time? And believe it or not, May is the best time. Now, depending on which part of the country you live in, it could be first part of May or second part of May.
So is that when you actually put your house in the market?
Exactly.
Or is that when you sell your
property?
When
you put your house on the market.
Hmm. First, I would have thought earlier.
Well, first 2 weeks of May apparently are very good when you live in the northern part of the country. Mm-hmm. New York, New Jersey, Chicago, etc. But when it comes to California, specifically Los Angeles and San Francisco, it's second part of May.
Why?
Yeah, you'd think it'd be the opposite. Yeah,
I don't know. They just looked at the data that had sold, you know, when, and they actually get more for their homes when they listed these particular times.
Well, you talked about one of your shows, the problems of trying to sell it in December. There are fewer buyers.
Exactly.
All the reasons.
Well, I can understand that, but the second and first week of May doesn't make, like, I'm trying to think about it, the logic of
sell it,
Californian logic.
Yeah, right.
They actually sell 19 days faster on average when you, you know, put their homes in the market these particular
times. So wait until May and then put it out. Because your house shows better, people want to move, they're just getting rid of the school.
Remember, there's those are the best, and historically, that's the best season to sell your home.
Right.
My guesses are is that people haven't looked at homes since November. So you got November, December, January, February, March, and even April, where people are waiting to start looking at homes. Mm-hmm. You know, they think, okay, the kids will be out of school in June.
Big part of it.
Exactly. So this, and I think that's when you start people, when people start looking at homes. Probably late April, mm-hmm. and once they see new homes coming on the market in May, they start bidding on it and start, you know, going for it. Now, in Orange County, because of the lack of inventory, homes are selling much faster. So if you price your homes correctly, I'm sure if you listed in May, second part of May, it's probably gone much faster.
Let me ask you another, this is an odd question I've ever asked, but it relates to that. One of the things that used to offset that in suburban markets was corporate relocations. My father was an executive of Chrysler Corporation, a regional manager. We moved whenever they said they needed a new regional manager. It had nothing to do with the time of year. So we moved in June and we moved in December. And that used to even out the market. I don't know that there are as many corporate relocations for a variety of reasons. One, it's expensive. Two, people just quit now. My dad would have never thought of quitting, and they sent him to some. When we went to Pittsburgh, he didn't want to go there, but he would have never quit, just found another job. And three, I don't know, with telecommuting and other sorts of things.
I agree with you, Paul. I think that's one of the. You're right. Unless you're a high paid executive and your presence is absolutely needed in a particular part of the country, they're not going to move you that fast.
Yeah. There are corporate executives that take on a responsible company's merger or whatever, and they still stay here, and they telecommute to wherever the office is now in some other part of the country.
I give you an example. If you want to get a power of attorney from the Iranian government, you had to travel to Washington, D.C. Nowadays, you can be in California, and through Skype, they actually interview you.
Really?
And sign that, you know, so you just save yourself a trip to D.C.
So you sell lots of homes. You have over the last few years lots and lots and lots
since
of homes.
Since 1988,
yes. And you find mortgages for them and all that. Do you see, it just your experience, anecdotally, is Orange County still a lot of people coming in for corporate removes here? What do we call them? Corporate relocations?
Corporate relocations. I haven't seen that many, actually. It's very specifically, you know, in case of some specific companies, they're opening up a brand new headquarters here.
Mm-hmm. Well, California is expensive to have a company here, like whichever way you cut it. We have high taxes, high state taxes. Our state taxes went up, I think, about a year or two. Mm-hmm. We went from 10% to 12%.
And housing
is expensive. So, I mean,
housing is very, very important. Think of UCI. They have a segment of the campus which is specifically for the professors. And it's only because if you're a professor and let's say you're living East Coast and you get a job at UCI, it's very difficult for you to buy a house in Irvine. So now what they've done is they've made this specific area of campus, specifically professors. You buy these homes. They're not at the market rate. Mm-hmm. They don't appreciate as much, but at least you can afford to live there.
Yeah,
they're very nice homes. They can probably tell us more about what they do to
kids. Well, a lot of colleges have that, because I was looking, I think Stanford has that up north too. Hmm. Because when you are in like areas where you know, the affordability index is very high, is universities provide a home. Mm-hmm. So, and these homes can only be sold to people that work in the university, and they go at much reasonable
I've price. Also heard, and I'm trying
and
to...
They don't appreciate as much as your regular ones.
Also heard of police departments do that, to
yes.
try and bring policemen into town. They want the policemen to live in the town, and they can't afford to live in some coastal town, so they'll give them... not only, maybe not housing, but they'll give them some sort of financing.
Actually, I'm going to tell you two things.
All right.
First, I did a loan for with City of Whittier.
Whittier is the one I was
Whittier.
Thinking, yes, right.
If you are a police officer that works for City of Whittier, they give you a down payment assistant.
Yeah.
Because I think it's, I don't remember, I think it's $45,000.
Yeah,
and you don't have to actually make a monthly payment on it.
Yeah.
Also, there is a program with HUD, which
Officer
is called
Next
Officer Next Door. So you know what HUD homes are.
Mm-hmm.
HUD homes are FHA loans that went bad, and HUD took them over, those
right.
homes, and they sell them, and they sell them as HUD repo. Well, certain homes, if they're tagged as Officer Next Door, which basically if you're an officer, I think you have to be a certain jobs you could, that you mm-hmm. have. You buy these homes, you can buy them 50% off.
Wow.
And the logic behind it is, like, if it's the area, it's a little rough area, and then you put a nice person, a police officer
yeah.
in there, it makes the area better.
Stabilizes it, yeah.
And I actually did one years and
Sounds
years
like
ago.
Sounds like a full-time job.
yeah.
Yeah, but you find, you know, think about it. I remember doing this for a police officer many years ago. And
in
I
Anaheim,
think,
wasn't it?
In no, it was in Santa Ana, and it wasn't a bad property. The property was going for $250, I think, at a time. He bought it for $125. I mean, there is a deal of a lifetime if anybody's looking. There are very few of them that are offered, but they are out there.
Any chance that will grow? Because here we are in Orange County. What's the average home price?
$700? $721.
Okay, so now you want to have a policeman who lives in Huntington Beach. You want to have a fireman that lives in Irvine. You want to have a whatever, any sort of public service employee here, and they don't make that kind of money. So how can they afford to, if they're not going to commute from far away, and you don't want them to commute from far away, how do you do that? Will cities set aside housing? Will, like universities?
You would think they would, but they haven't actually done as much as they should.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you. I think cities have a responsibility of doing something like that for public employees, which are needed in that city,
mm-hmm.
firemen, policemen, even teachers.
Yeah, right.
But I don't think they've done enough. And mainly it's because of money. They just don't have the money to do that. You know,
we did have a show again on earlier in the week, and I'll have to remember the exact college back east, but it was somewhere in New Jersey, and it was a prominent university, like Princeton or something, and they're actually doing a study. In fact, I was going to try and get them on your show here. They're doing a study on this idea of maybe municipalities owning homes for municipal workers, police, fire, city workers, and will companies ever go back to that too? When my dad was a kid, Ford Motor Company in the 1920s created housing tracks next to their factories. The first subdivisions actually ever made in America were made in Detroit outside the Ford factories, as Ford wanted his workers to live right next to the factory so they could walk to work. That was
a very
benefit.
Good idea, actually. That's a very beneficial.
So why wouldn't a giant corporation not only supply good salaries but supply cheap housing for their employees?
Because it costs money.
Well,
no.
Here's plain simple answer to you, Paul.
Say, before the show, we were talking about some points on mortgages. What, you know, you had about, I think...
Well, there's a couple of interesting facts I wanted. There's like five or six interesting facts about mortgages, general facts. Number one, underwriters don't really care how much money you have in the bank. They do and they don't. Like, and I'll give you an example. The most important thing to an underwriter is your debt-to-income ratio. It's like, what do we mean by debt-to-income ratio?
Right.
They look at your gross income, right? And if you, let's say, if you make 100, they don't want to see more than 45% of it go to
your debt.
To your debt. Now, there is such a rule as asset depletion that Fannie Mae has, that it's, let's say, if you had like $360,000 in your account. They take whatever money you have in your account and divide it by 360, and they give that to you as an income. But you have to be super, super, you have to have lots of assets for to qualify. So just the fact that you have a lot of money in your bank, it makes you stronger, but it's not going to make an underwriter actually change your mind on whether they're going to lend you that money. Because you have to understand, the lender cannot come after your bank account after if the loan goes bad.
Oh,
you know?
Really? Okay.
No, they can't. They can only, the property is number one thing. They can only go after the property.
Mm-hmm.
Second,
and money moves in or out. So I got $100,000 right there tomorrow. It's
gone.
Let
me explain something to Paul here. In California, when you owe money to the bank on your house, they have two choices. One is to take the house and be done with it, or they can take you to court and try to collect the money. Of course, everybody takes the easiest route. Mm-hmm. They just go after your house and take the house and they're done. So it doesn't matter how much money you have in your bank account, what kind of car you drive. You may have five other homes, you know, but that one particular home, if you don't pay on it, they're just going to take that away.
Right.
That's why.
Okay. Now, having no credit score is not going to make it easy for you. Now, there is some rules Fannie Mae that says you can have alternate credit, but really, if you're going to go purchase a property, you really do need to have a credit score.
So let me ask you this, Faye. Let's say I bought everything cash. I'm a good consumer. I bought my car cash and everything, and now I'm going to go and buy a house. Is that going to cause a problem for me? I won't be able to get a loan because I've
never had a
credit.
Fannie Mae says we can use alternate credit. Now, how do we mean? What do we mean by alternate credit? You pay rent, right? That doesn't get reported on your credit report. We could verify whether you paid your rent on time, and we do that by getting your canceled check or getting a verification of rent if really it's a big, you know, it's a company, not a firm, I'm a mom and pop. So you cancel check, you know, you pay your insurance maybe, so you still have to prove that you bought something on credit and like, or you
but
have
some.
But this
is for Fannie Mae, right? And if I'm a jumbo borrower?
Forget it.
Forget it.
So you're going to have a credit score. I mean, I can't really.
So the fact, let you know, just for the sake of the argument, the house I'm living in, I don't owe any money on it. I owe no money on my credit card. I don't even have a credit card.
Mm-hmm.
My car is paid cash and have a very good job with a good income.
Why do you want a loan anyway?
But I'm just thinking of buying another house, and I think I can afford to put down 25%.
But you know, and what you're cheap, saying in the real life, you don't exist. Because most people, if you have a home, you have a car, you've somewhere down the line, somebody hits you with a credit card, and you got one, because I really yet to see somebody go buy a $2 million home that never had a credit.
But I will see this, there's more people than ever before because of the downturn, because of problems in business and everything else, have given up paying with credit cards and whatnot. I don't use a credit card anymore.
But you have
anything.
Credit cards. You don't use them, but you do have them.
I tore them up. I got rid of them a couple of years
ago. I know, but you still have a history of credit.
Yeah, right.
But
if
you choose not to use it.
If I have credit cards that I've had for 10 years, I've never used them, that's considered credit, correct?
Well, if you've never used them, did they...
Or you haven't used them in 10 years or 5
right,
years or something.
I think actually when they score you, because the problem is like a lot of investors, when you go to sell loans in the secondary market, there are requirements. One of the requirements is a FICO score. So if you don't have credit, you don't have a score, so how am I going to fit you in that box?
Mm-hmm. But I just see more and more people as they get older say, I've paid off my house, the heck with it. I own my car. I threw away the credit cards. I just buy what I have. And in a weird way, if we suddenly wanted to finance something, if we decided we didn't want to put all our cash into a house, we wanted to keep it and invest it for income because we don't have a, you know, as we retire, we need income, right? I'm faced with this. I find myself, because I thought I was being a good citizen, will suddenly create a bad lack of credit score, which would allow me...
Right. You would have a credit score. If you paid off a mortgage, you had car payments, you were still going to have
I know, but let's say 10 years from now, if I continue this trend, I've got all this stuff paid off, and I haven't bought anything on credit in 10 years.
Can you please just use one of your credit cards? You don't use that. Honestly, no. It's like to get an 800 FICO, you don't have to have 55 credit. You know, you could have three credit cards and have an excellent.
How much do you have to buy to make an 800?
It's not how much. It's the length of the credit is important. Like, how long have you had that credit card?
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, if you always paid it and you paid. And, like, how much do you owe on that credit card at the time? I go take your credit score. So there's a lot of factors that goes in there. But you do, I mean, if you do want to get a mortgage, you do have to have a credit score in to get a good mortgage. Mm-hmm. There are those for the first-time home buyer that fits that customer. You know, you've got somebody, you know, a lot of Hispanics don't believe in, you know, banks, and they don't actually trust the banks.
Right, and Vietnamese too, and Chinese too.
Yeah, but it fits their overall
demographics.
You know, it's mm-hmm. like they've never owned a property. They're looking to buy a $300,000-$400,000 home. That you can, like, you could probably get alternate credit. Alternate credit could be your utility bills. You could get a rating from your utility companies. You get a rating from your rent. So those are the ways we can show it. But it has to fit the rest of the file. What I mean is, like I don't have credit, but I mean, it's got to fit. I mean, you can look at a file and know.
And this is called alternative credit.
Alternative credit. So those are the. So having no credit, it's going to be a handicap for you when you go to get a mortgage. Now, I would recommend probably if you want to start, like you could probably start with like one of these cards. You know, like if you've never had a credit, it's mm-hmm. probably tough for you to get a credit card. But a lot of banks offer a secured credit card, whereas you put $1,000 in your savings account and you have to leave it there, and they give you a credit card up to $1,000, so if you ever go back, you know, they have the money there. That would be a good way of starting. I would say you should start with about three credit cards, and that's it. You don't really need any.
And it doesn't
matter
if I buy something for $1,500 or $15,000.
It's about using it and paying it on time. It's not. You don't have to take it all the way to the.
So
to
you're arguing against my late great dear father, who preached to me for his whole life when he never used a credit card unless he absolutely he had credit cards, never used them, paid for everything in cash, owned his car for 10 years, owned his house for 30 years, had no debt, no credit, but you're saying that was a bad thing.
It wasn't a bad thing. No. You're joking. You see, this is how they change your world. No, what I'm trying to tell you, if you're looking to go get a mortgage.
Yes.
And you do not have a credit score, it's going to be a handicap to you. Now, you choose.
Then you got to do alternative things.
What you want to do is probably like 6 months, a year in advance. You need to start building your credit up again if you mm-hmm. are going to go purchase. I'm not the one. Remember, Paul, I'm not the one that sets the rules. I'm the only. You know, you can.
You're
just
the bearer of bad news.
I'm the bearer of bad news. So there's one. Another thing, if you're self-employed.
Yes.
It's tough to do a loan for you.
What do
I mean by tough?
I like the old days. No income, stated, or whatever, just stated income.
Remember what happened in 2008? Now, you know, it used to be when I started in the mortgage industry, which was back early 90s, mm-hmm. we didn't have stated income back then, and it was just starting to come.
Mm-hmm.
But stated income was really for self-employed borrowers. It was not created for the teacher or the firefighter, you know, self-employed borrower. Because what a self-employed borrower think they make and what we think they make is two different things, you know. Just because you take $5,000 out of your corporate account every month does not mean that you make $5,000 a month.
No, you just had a lucky month.
Well, it's how your accountant does your books.
And the accounting rules are designed to make every deduction that you can, so to try and get down to zero. Every self-important person trying to goes down to zero. To pay less taxes. And when you do that, then you create less of, in the bank's mind, then you say you have no income.
So as a general rule, like I'm a loan officer, so if somebody says I'm self-employed, I always want to see their tax returns.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I don't trust the person, it's just that the way you look at an income as a mortgage originator is different than what you think.
But how do you pick that income tax apart when it shows they have very... You know, they're not cheating, but they have taken advantage of everything they can, written off everything they can, and in so doing, wrote their
But sometimes you can't.
Then I tell them they qualify for a pizza.
Because I remember where Faye used to work, in '90s, early '90s. The owners were a mortgage company, and they were doing very well, but they couldn't refinance their house because, just like you say, they
paper, took it, no money.
Exactly. They made good money. They wrote it off correctly and didn't pay any tax to the IRS. They couldn't refinance.
That was but you have to have something left of it. If you wrote off everything, I mean, it's a write-off. You know, what you tell to IRS is what we believe.
I know.
Now, if it's not, then you need to tell a different story to IRS.
Yeah.
That's just, you know, remember, we're going to go back to the same thing. I'm just a messenger. Do not shoot the messenger. Okay? And that's why I'm bringing these points, because everybody that has an opinion about this, but it's the fact is the fact.
I think everybody sides with me that listens to this show, because I'm the average guy here. I'm trying to write off everything I can. I'm trying to be a good guy and not have any debts and all this stuff here, and the lousy banks penalize me for it here.
Yeah, you can buy a pizza. Don't forget that. You qualify for that.
One pizza coming up. All right. Any final thoughts here?
Are we done? I still have a couple.
Yeah, we're down the last minute here. Yeah. So final thoughts.
Okay, well, final thoughts is have a good week.
Well, actually, keep buying homes. The prices are going up. Trying to find the right home and qualify for the right home. Check with the mortgage originator before you look at homes. We want to make sure that you can afford that house.
And biggest thing, don't change your job or quit your job before you apply for a mortgage.
Yeah, right.
Looks like that's it for today. Thank you for listening. Make sure you check our Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat, all on the OCHC Radio. If you have any comments or concerns, please email us at OCHCRadio@gmail.com. And here's our Green Point of the Week.
From Green Eileen.
Hey, everybody. Green Eileen with your Green Tip of the Week. And on Friday, we just had Earth Day. Every April 22nd, we have Earth Day. It's something that's celebrated all across the globe. But it started in the 70s. It was a movement where people wanted to make a point of how we are polluting our Earth. And one thing that came out of it that we're still doing today is recycling. So we are recycling glass, paper, metal, plastic, all those things. But that, you know, let's talk about it. That was in the 1970s. We're talking decades later. We're still recycling. How can we take it up a notch? And the way we could take it up a notch is actually by purchasing products that are made out of recycled materials. And you find them everywhere. You could find them in the grocery store. You find them at Home Depot. You find them at your local 7-Eleven. There's lots of different places where you could find products made out of recycled materials. And I highly recommend it, merely because of an economic standpoint, supply and demand. You're having a product that's already been used. You put it in the recycle bin, but in order to perpetuate that cycle, we need to be a lot more conscious of what we could purchase that's made out of recycled products. So checking out those labels and where you can make that contribution and contribute to the supply and demand of recycling is your Green Tip of the Week from Green Eileen.
Let's face it, not all company challenges are the same, which is why Strategic Market Intelligence can help identify the actionable information you need to be more competitive. Gain a better understanding of your brand, competition, best prospects, or new product opportunities to generate greater revenues in 2015. Call 949-357-9547 or visit www.strategicmarketintelligence.com.